been there for a while, but it's not as popular as just 2 years ago. Suddenly, lots of people address those. There are a couple of things I want to answer you as a general introduction. So I would like to answer these three questions, okay? So most people actually know that graphics card, when we're doing this here, has been lots of discussion between the game community, and that's why we have this graphics card, right? So is that really graphics card only for hardcore gamers, or they're all excited? I mean, how about us? And also one answer is, okay, why people want to use this for computing, and how easy to use it, okay? So, of course not for hardcore gamers. That's why we're having this project, we have this presentation. But we had to stack them. How would I say that? I don't know how, I talk with all my students about, okay, how much you spend on your graphics card sitting in your living room or bedroom you do games. Most of them, they say, ah, yes, I have one. So we stack them because this customer here, because this industry here, now we have a very affordable card that have lots of computing power on that we can rely on and give a lots of kind of resources for our to do our research. I don't think this computer has network. I have two links in here. Basically, you can take a look. There are lots of research on that. If you take a look about this link for the project, it's linked to NVIDIA CUDA Zone. It's one of the central place. They collect all this project, different people doing this. It's all over the place, bioinformatics, image processing, so lots of things. Simulation, nuclear simulation, all kinds of things in there. More than 200 projects overall. Courses, more than 100 universities offer GPU courses, MIT, UIUC, Maryland, and we have also the courses offered here I collaborating with Dr. Fong and me. So we're teaching this course, and our link is there. So you can link to our course from NVIDIA site about us. So there's a very, very popular research area there talking about using GPU. Okay. So yes, we're excited about this. Lots of people jump on that. Why? Because GPU is so powerful and is cheap, is commoditized, and it's everywhere. So that's actually, I showed this the die size of how powerful it is. Basically, this is probably most recently, not the very recent, but one of the most recent card, GTX 280 from NVIDIA. This is the size of the die. Actually, this is considered to be the biggest die ever. This Taiwan company produced it for a single chip compared with some of the Intel's processor we have. There's a 1.4 billion transistors on that, almost double or triple some of most of the Intel's CPU. And this card has nearly 1 teraflops of computational power in there. We have questions? This is 4-core, I think. Okay, this guy, 240 cores. And this card, 350 you buy from Newegg. You can buy even there's another version after that. Actually, it's two of this card combined, two of these GPUs combined with into one card. It's called GTX 295. Only costs about $500. It's 480 cores in there. So, and a lot of people are buying that because it's for gaming, and we are buying that because for general purpose computing. So there are for this type of card support. The general purpose computing, we call the GPGPUs, general purpose computing for GPUs, they claim like sometime early, late last year, they already claimed over 100 million of this card have been sold. So people all have this in their living room, in the research lab all over the place. And for us, between Dr. Fung and me, we have about 10 different machines already have those. all the laptops you have with Macs, they have this computational capacity in that, right? And we also get money from department to get this for this course. We have 8 top-notch machines with this card on that. Okay, so it is personal supercomputer. That's how NVIDIA labeled this. Why we call that? Because if you compare the card we have here, actually this is actually the 3 card plug in one motherboard. So one box you have over there, so this box, I want to do a little bit demo there. You can have at most easily 4 cards, 3 to 4 cards on that. So total together we have 5 to 7 teraflops of computational power on that. So I just do this, I don't know if the comparison is fair or not, you know, HPC people can tell me. This is 2,000 top-notch supercomputer, number one, IBM ASCII White. 7.26, it's equivalent. So compare with technology we have right now with this $4,000 machine we bought, compare with 110 million dollars machine we have before. It's equivalent. And recently I checked with NVIDIA side, actually in Japan, this Tokyo Technology University something, yes, you know, they have this kind of cluster of these GPUs. They have 170 of these GPUs in there, and they have around 170 teraflops of computation power. And when they run LeanPack, I think is standard way to test these machines, they have the performance of like 70 teraflops of computation things. It's very, very powerful. I don't know if I want to compare this with our System X or System G. Is you're right. You're right. So you're definitely right. So actually, one this type of GPU be created, the first generation of the card called the GTX GeForce 8000 series has no double position at all on that. Now this machine starting getting double position. So the instead of have 240 cores on here, they also have 30 double position cores in there too to give you position to double position computation power. So it's a lot of things in there. Thank you for the information. So it's great. Okay, so lots of power. How easy to use it? That's actually the question lots of people ask. Okay, I mean, some people have on. It's on now? Okay, I turned it off, sorry. It's in my pocket. Someone probably behind me right now. Okay, so how easy to program? Because usability is actually the big issue in here. GPU programming has been there for 10 years. When the first generation of GPU came out, people started using GPU to do computation. But until 2 years ago when NVIDIA released CUDA, basically, it's actually a very easy programming framework, then suddenly everybody jump on that. So usability is actually a big issue there. So we have NVIDIA release this, target of this, general purpose computing for us. Before we have is what? We have to understand all the graphics APIs to understand how to program on that. There's the shaders, there's OpenGL stuff, there is DirectX stuff. You have to really do this math and have to map my data into textures and load into shaders, do these things, and then you get it. Now it's C language based. So it's exactly like you write C code, provide you some additional libraries, then you can run whatever you want. So in terms of usage, it's a big improvement when they're using C. And there's tons of tutorials online and lots of samples we rely to.
Are there architectures for the GPU core? What kind of functions are there?
they are in the slides. Yes, so in the slides. Yeah, we are smarties, right? We're writing, asking the right questions. Sorry. So there are in the slides I will discuss with you, but I wanted, you know, gradually dive into that. I don't want to, you know, overwhelming you with lots of hardware terms, all these kind of things. But we are going to understand this. So that is great. Very powerful, easy to use. Let's do it, everyone. Let's program on GPU now. No, we had to wait. There's a lot of research in there, and we cannot actually fully use these things. One thing is actually during the couple of next slides, I will talk about is one type of algorithm called data parallel algorithms. Actually, this can take advantage of the GPU framework because it's really tied together with how they designed the GPU the first moment. However, for other things, simple as sorting, sometimes if you not pay attention to, your GPU implementation can be worse than the single core CPU implementation. That's very, very tricky to implement those things. And because for those type of things, there's no data parallel, means there's a lot of data or control dependencies. Pay attention to here. It's this dependencies kills the performance of GPUs. And we'll go through the different project. When we take a look at examples, we'll see how this kills performance. Then we are trying to address it. And also another thing is I have to address heavily is compare with what CPU does. Normally you don't care too much about, okay, how much cache you have, and if memory big enough, you can pretty much do everything. But for GPUs, a lot of hardware limitations. There's a lot of resources. How many registers you have, how many cache you have you able to use, what the bandwidth, what the latency, there's lots of issues prevent you to just do simple like, oh, just port my code to a GPU, everything just flash. No. Actually, so one of the research I collaborated with Dr. Fong and a couple of students here, Jeremy, Tom, Sean, and we have publication on IPDPS is, we find out it's one application we're running on the first generation of the card. They only have 128 cores on that. And we have a pretty good performance. And when we ran on the nearest card with GTX 280, it has 240 cores. Performance does not increase, actually sometimes it's decreased. So you cannot just simply say, okay, number of cores increase like we had before for clock speed increase for CPU, performance increase. No, there's a lot of hardware limitations have to pay attention to get best performance we have. So there's a lot of limitation in here. Okay, now I would like to dive a little bit into GPU computing because be able to understand the claim I have from previous slides, you need to understand why GPU has these limitations and what's actually the concept this GPU we're using. So GPU using this called stream computing and using a CMD architecture, and if we know, we vectorize everything, right? So we have input stream coming in, and we have outstream produced by this cores, processing cores in here. And instructions also come in here. So in here, we take a look at input stream. If you take a look, the input stream is not like a single stream like what we have, a single instruction, single data point. Actually, the input stream has a width of, for example, this is 3. So they can process 3 elements at the same time. It's called vectorization, sorry. And coming in and coming out, like a flow. If you take a look at all these things, is okay. Talk about data parallel in here. Data coming here in parallel, processing parallel, and stream out. If you take a look at this, what if, because I know somebody is programming on CPU using SSE and using AMD technology, 3D now, something kind of mess. What if suddenly there's a dependency between this data and this data? There's a stall here and have to and sit there and wait and get another round and to finish this. It's not data dependency, then suddenly everything changes. And the GPU architecture later on, when I introduce, there is a big penalty for this. So data dependency and control dependency act as a big performance killer here. Okay, give a introduction of what's actually original GPU is designed for. Then you probably can borrow from this analog to understand how the GPU does things. So what the GPU does, give a graphic example. What the GPU designed to process geometries, process triangles, meshes, all kinds of things. For example, we have this kind of mesh as an input with these 8 different vertices, and we want to produce parallel and create this deformation of the mesh getting here. So assume that this transform matrix can just do that. When I have vertex in times this transformation matrix, I have this, I have that, okay? So original one that designed this, everything is very data parallel. So one click, everything flows through this course in parallel and they get data done. And they can do that very efficiently. Let me see if I can show you a quick demo on how efficient they can do. The problem is I cannot see this. The mouse starting doesn't work. Where's my mouse? Can I see the mouse? Where the mouse is? I cannot see. Oh. Okay, great. Okay. I load the data. Let's load a large data set. So this data set I load actually include about 10 million different vertices. It's a big, big data set. And we would like to see is actually a very simple thing. So this data set, we have 5 million vertices and 10 million faces. If you take a look, it's about this much. If you zoom in, we have a frame rate of 6 frames per second. If you take off all the points, that's all these points over here we have seen, right? So basically what this thing does, basically what I have show a demo here is I run a simple shader, basically. It's a process shader. What the shader does, include a time in here. So what the time does is, when I have a time, it's a simple sine function to change the current location of this. So each vertex actually going this through and doing the sine function and change my location based on my current t, and do this sine wave. So if you think about this, 5 million vertices and going this through these things, get this frame rate of 14 frames per second frame rate. So this amazing thing they can do in Greg's card, because everything is just flow in and flow out without any delay. There's no dependencies in between. When I get my data, apply this transformation, I get the final thing. It's all the things can do. Right? I hope this thing still works. So that's about this. So if you take a look at the architecture, this is actually the first architecture picture I show here. It's a simplified version, and I don't want to confuse you with a GTX 280 architecture. So it is a shared memory system. If you take a look, all the GPU device memory in here, and there's so many cores, of course I just list 8, there are 240 for GTX 280. All the data coming in is input stream, distributed to different cores at the same time, and the process, if there's no data dependency, everything's fast, we have this big data coming in with this rate. The bandwidth is amazing fast, okay? Then this data flow in, when we have no dependency, data directly out into my frame buffer for rendering or into my CPU memory if I want to get the result back. Very fast. So this is called a data parallel. So it's no dependencies between processing different cores. And then this goes extremely fast. So those type of applications can really benefit from this if you are running this. Of course, image processing, video processing, I talk about. Linear algebra, that's why LeanPack can run very fast on this machine. Particle-based simulation, agent-based thing, because you can have so many particles, you have each thread, each core can handle that. And the graphics course, there's so many different things and you can run very fast. However, you have no data parallel program. This example on the show is, if this core one and core two, they have a dependency. For example, core two require data from core one to be finished, get the final result. What they have to do is, they have to go back and forth, write back for my temporary data into my GPU memory and load again to core two, then process, okay? During this loop, other cores are just waiting here, doing nothing because you have this dependency. This because, the reason why is because this is a shared memory system. This, compared with some modern supercomputer architecture, there's no directly message pass between different cores. The only thing you can send data from core to core is from the global memory here, the device memory. And everyone has to wait on this. It's not vectorized. And the GPU do not provide a very efficient synchronization yet. So you write back in here, and the biggest thing, if you see here, what I put here, the previous slides, bandwidth is high. Here, latency, high too. Means when you have, when you want access one from here to here, they had to wait about 200 to 400 or sometimes 600 cycles to give you the data while other people are waiting, right? One cycle, they can do so many things and you spend 400 cycles in here waiting for so many things. It's a big, big bottleneck in here if you want to do this processing. So now I would like to use some kind of project we did to demonstrate and to showcase some of the limitations and advantage we have down here. So first, I would like to show a couple of data parallel algorithms. Of course, image processing, that's the story I talked in the first, when we started the presentation. It's a video processing application. I'm working with Francis Quack and some of our students working on this. The goal is we want to track down in the video data about this motion vectors. When the hand is moving down, you can track it. When the camera is actually doing this kind of rotation, they can track all these things moving. And this kind of very basic low-level image processing tools can be used about in so many different areas you want to track. You want to do interaction, you want to do so many things. It's very powerful. However, as I said, it's very, very time-consuming process. Why is this? Because we're using a concept called vector coherence mapping. That's the original author here. So they're trying to use spatial coherence. Actually the vector. Okay, how to do this? The idea is simple. So you have this frame at frame I, and you have three dots in here, this interest point you have here. And when these three dots from frame I to frame I plus one, okay, if there's non-rigid deformation, they just do this, okay? The frame here. And we find out, I want to find out these vectors, okay? How to find those? So idea is this. So first we want to do is, we want to do a correlation for each point. For example, I have this window centered by the first point. I want to find out in this window, this point looks like which point inside this image. Basically, what I would do is we send this kind of small window and compare with small window with this small window, find, okay, is this two window looks like exactly the same or really close or not? So we run this, find, oh, this is not close. So we run this all over all the pixels in these things, and eventually we find, okay, good. We find out this three windows looks like my small window here, and find out this. And they give me potential, okay, this probably my potential vector, this probably be that, and this will be probably. So there's three choices. And I don't know which one is which. And how to find out the best choice? And we ran the same thing. For point two, we do this, small window, find out with P2, correlate to this image. And after do this, and we find out P2 has also three potentials, right? Same thing for P3, find this. And one, all this, we get all these images in here, sub-images we call it. And what we do is we run the accumulation, all these sub-images together. We overlay on together. If you take a look, what happened here is this vector has been accumulated three times. Okay, so that's our vector. That's very actually robust image processing, but require tons of computation. The computation need to do this correlation for each interest point you have from all the sub-images. And for each interest point, you have to accumulate all these images together, all these pixels together. And you have to run that for every single frame in the video. Very, very time consuming. So what we, question? Okay, very good question. So if there's no deformation, exactly matches. Okay, however, if there's a deformation, we have a slightly shift from different things. But since we're running correlation, it's not like we just find out the biggest, okay, we not just find as the biggest peak. There is a distribution along this. There's a distribution along that, we can still find some correlation. Then we accumulate everything together, we can still find the peak point in there. Okay.
Very efficient. So effectively, even though there may be some rotation translation happening over there, as long as the general shape is maintained, it can tell you what the closest matches, however I'm looking at it. That could help you indicate which direction your shift is occurring. And it also tell you mapping from point to point, the turn angle that it happened on, and that
could be. Right. I understand. So basically what it says is instead of match this against this small window by small window, actually you match it against that small window, talk about is any rotation, any scale inside that.
Yeah.
Right, right, so the Okay, let's move on. So this because this is for this idea. So what we did is very simple. For correlation, because we are running correlation between each of these things against each sub-window in here and here. So we can do this correlation very efficiently as each thread to take care of those. They're not data dependency between. So we can, everything inside memory, which is loaded. There's no dependency between thread. I'm not waiting your result. I'm not waiting your decisions. So I'm just going here. And for accumulation too, so I have each thread accumulate each pixel inside my final image. Then this pixel will, this thread will go through all the sub-images to pick up exactly that pixel inside image and accumulate all together. And we have efficient accumulation window in here. So for this, only these two operations, we can have more than 100x speed up. However, so because VCM is not only using this, there's sorting in that and there's small things. So we can about 20 to 40 times speed up based on what kind of hardware we're running. So it's a very, very powerful thing. Okay, looks like I don't have time for demo. Okay, let's skip it. And it's another one actually we're doing is we're doing a volume rendering. It's very data parallel too. So volume rendering, there's lots of research in that on how to speed up for scientific computing, for scientific visualization. If you have a large volume simulated data you want to visualize in real time, lots of people spend lots of time on that. And with this idea of this parallel computing here, because volume rendering is just shooting from I, from rays through every pixel in the image plane, cross this volume data and accumulate information from data point to data point, right? And in the calculation between these different threads are independent of each other. So you can easily parallelize those and with this, and it can easily get large time speed up when you do this compared with single core. Of course, it's not fair, but you can see kind of speed up you can get. Of course, there's a lot of research we're following up with is how to efficiently go through this space and how many rays I want to throw in this image and how to distribute these images and put it on the GPU. There's a lot of research in there how to speed up those. And also, when the data set is huge, cannot fit into this GPU memory, you know, even we have 1 gig, you know, we have much data, bigger data set than 1 gig, so how can we realize this? There's streaming, there's blocking, lots of research in here actually involved. So if I have time at the end, I will show demo to this those two applications too. Now as another one, I'm starting to show another one. This is non-data parallel. It's my work with Dr. Ramakrishna and Wu and other students we had. So this is a data mining project. This data mining project we want to do is we want to enable real-time solution for computational neuroscience. What you want to do is this. Here you have some neurons actually laid down in this sensor plane arbitrarily, and we have a measurement where sensors underneath that plane can measure the spikes actually for different neurons into a two-dimensional grid, and we measure the spikes. So, okay, this spike means this position, this spike means other position. So we have lots of spikes going through time. We can label each spike as a string, as a ASCII value, something like this. Then we have ASCII strings like here. And we go through as our GPU to process this, and we're trying to find out, is there any kind of relations between this neural, how they fight together? For example, this portion find first, then this, and this. And always there's this pattern in here that we can find out, oh, there probably will be some connection between these neurons. There's certain patterns in there, right? So the problem we want to address is this. If we label all the spikes as this input stream as my ASCII stream, basically label, okay, this position label is M, this position is this. I want to find out, is there any certain pattern? B follows A, then C follows B, this pattern. And sometimes we have time dependencies, in here, time constraints in here, so within certain time, B happens. So what we want to do is we want to find out this. For example, in this case, we go through this input stream, it can be very long, max to max data, we find out, okay, this A, B, C in here, and another A, B, C, there's another A, B, C, A, B, C, A, B, C, so there's lots of A, B, C's in here I want to find out, okay? So that's actually the problem I want to address. How to do this, actually we're using a finite state machine and to keep tracking this. So we have state machine of A to B, B to C, and C when go back, when the C finished and go back to A. So we go through this thing, we scan this once, and we use this, and we can count how many ABCs we have. Very simple. However, if you take a look at this, it's a finite state machine. Where is this data parallel coming in? It's very hard to find out this, because finite state machine has single scan, so a lot of dependencies between data points, two data points, right? So how can we parallelize this? And if there are so many of this, for example, when we're trying to research at the first moment, because sometimes there are so many of this episode, we want to find B, C, D, or something different. If I have 1,000 of this to find, okay, that's fine. I just have each thread, just keep finding one of those. And then we have a very high degree of parallelism in the air. However, if only have few of this, let's, for example, only have one. You ask one thread to do this, how about other resources on GPU? So the idea we come back is, we borrow the idea from the concept from MapReduce. So this actually, this is not exactly MapReduce, but it's borrowed idea from that. So when we have input stream, what we do is we segment the input stream into different blocks. And we ask each thread to count one block. While we have this count, we have partial counts in here. Then we do a reduce, and we have a final count, right? Even here, we have problem when we do this reduce as a final stage, probably only a few threads working, but we have a very high speed in the first mapping stage, and we have initial this thing coming on. And of course, there's a lot of research we're doing here and trying to improve the performance as the map reduce. The only tricky here, and you have to pay attention, that's why I said it's not 100% map reduce, is when we're doing this reduce, there's some computation we have to do here. How to, it's not simply you say, oh, I have 10 counts here, 3 counts here, I have 13 counts, because there are some connections between here can give me troubles. So we had to solve that logic. And that turns out sometimes to be very substantial cost performance as whole reduce part suffers. So what we need to do is we're still research on that and how to improve this, get higher level of parallelism and fully take advantage of the GPU cores.
One pattern.
That's a problem we have. If it's multiple, it's easy to get high, it's a little bit easier to get high level, high performance.
The second question is, is it true that at most there can be only one pattern that crosses the boundary? Is that the reason?
Right. But you don't know which ABC, you don't know it's between A, B, and B, and C.
Yeah.
Right. And one sometimes, yeah. So the case is one we have very long episode, you have 11, A to something Z, 26.
There will be many different cuts of it.
That's right. There are so many different combinations we had to go through.
Yeah,
right. Barbara?
So usually reducing the substance, is this related to something that people are able to do?
Yes. That's right. That's exactly, yes. Okay, I had to speed up. So right now we get a really 15x speed up for some large data set we're running into. And now we can run in this sub-window shifting based or real-time mining in here. Okay, the last one, crowd simulation. I don't know if I can show a demo. If I have time, I definitely show a demo. It's really cool. We have about 3,000 characters running all there. 3,000, we can get to 10,000 there easily, and we're still working on that. So my students, you know, he's smiling, and he spent lots of time last night trying to get it work. It's a shame I cannot show here, but I definitely want to show after the questions. Okay. So the problem in here is that so many problems in this crowd simulation is, first, we want to address in this talk is about path planning. You want to get from A to B, but if there's a hill in here, there's people in here, you don't want to get across people. And you have to do the dynamically path finding in here, how to do this. And you have lots of relations in between and how to solve it efficiently. You have 10,000 of this and how to find this. Of course, there are different things, rendering things, we're doing level of detail research, basically. When this thing's really close to you, you have a high level of detail, you have 20,000 polygons, not 20,000, 2,000 polygons. Far, you have only a couple of pixels. This actually up here, 2 pixels, 3 pixels. You don't want to have 2,000 polygons to represent 3 pixels, right? So there's a lot of distance measuring about how to turn on and off, and we're using GPU to speed up this, of course. That is data parallel, though. But the path finding we're solving is not. So how we solve the path planning issues? We're using a broader idea from physics. We're using potential field, vector field. So we just say we don't want to solve each agent, each characters. We solve for the field, for the terrain we have, okay? So we have this terrain, and after n, as long as we have discrete grade, And we can tell how from each grade go to another grade, then all the things inside that cell we just follow. Now the problem is coming, how to calculate this field dynamically and based on your position of the people who move. So we have every single frame because people move around, and we have to solve that field efficiently. So actually, this is actually the equation we're solving. It's a PDE. It's called Acolnoff equation. Well, Acolnoff equation is actually trying to model this wave propagation problem to minimize the cost from every single cell to every other single cell. So you have a cost function model for each grade level. So you have a cost because the people here, you don't cross from here, high cost. High cost here because you probably cannot see this yellow dots here represent small characters. And this guy's trying to get across. When you get across, you don't want to get through these cells because there's people in there. I want to avoid this. So through this line is easier. So when you get here, you see because they're solving this potential field in terms of gradient, trying to minimize the cost, people trying to follow this path, see? But when you get here and you don't want to cross, so when this guy get here, they have to follow the field and get around it, right? So this actually is the potential field solving this PDEs on GPU. And so it's definitely not data parallel. So how we solve it? So solve is this. First, we give, for example, a goal location. For this three, we already know this is a goal, the cost is zero. And the other cost in here. So we are every iteration, we start from here and do like something like flooding our algorithm, and we swap this whole area to increase, find out is this the right location or not? Is this the right location or not? And we increase, and end, we solve the whole thing. However, if you take a look what we have here, there's a lot of dependencies into how many of this boundary I'm solving. And there are relations between different computations. When I get my result, I pass my result to you, and how to get this data pass through efficiently. So there's no simple solution for that. And what we try to do is we try to take advantage of, this is a picture you ask, Godmar is actually this architecture of GPU, GDTX 280. So how the GPU is organized, as I told you, is GDTX 280 has 240 cores, right? They're not just have a linear layout of this cores, and actually they group them. They group in 8-in-1, they call it multiprocessor, whatever they call it. So think about this as a vector processor. Have 8 processor in that, 8 data in, 8 data out in the same time. They're sharing the same instruction cache, okay? But from the global memory, from the GPU device memory, 1 gig of memory here, it's not like directly the copy data in here. They have this guy called the shared memory. I just don't know why they give the name, because this shared memory is a share between multiprocessors. But actually, it's just a cache. But the cache you can control on CPU, hardware control how the cache performs, right? It's hardware have a cache algorithm, right? Organize all this, how many different directions you have. Here, you control by writing code. So you can load whatever data in here and process and using this course and write back. The advantage here is big because those cache is, the memory latency is 1 cycle, so it's like a register. You access, you get it. Those global memory, 200, 400 cycles, because I said its latency is very high, so you really want to avoid this kind of things. Okay, so if you can take advantage of shared memory, for example, you do lots of local calculation in a small area, for example, you do this a particle system, also in the neighborhood, you want to load in there and do calculation, lots of calculation, whatever, and when you finish, write data back. So this, but the problem for this, I will talk about this later on, is between these multiprocessors is a big problem. Because between multiprocessors, if this core requires data for this core, you cannot use this shared memory. You had to write all the way back and load it in. That is the biggest problem we have. And NVIDIA trying to address this problem right now to try to give you some easy synchronization method to pass data between multiprocessors. So what we're doing inside our Acolnoff solver is we simply divide this whole thing into grid tile, and we load each tile into multiprocessor and process them. So we do this local solving first. When the local solving is converged, we find the solution, and we propagate the boundary information to my neighbor tiles and propagate through high-level things. So we save a lot of time if you have this tile is big, we have to solve a lot of time locally because accessing this local memory. Okay, finally, get to my last slides. There's a lot of other research questions we have answered. This is actually for me and for all you guys understand what's the GPU about, right? We also we only talk about data parallel, not non-data parallel in terms of memory latency issues and increase high, increase the level of parallelism. But there's a lot of other things. We need compiler support heavily. We need runtime scheduling algorithm heavily in terms of how to dynamically schedule my threads. How to get, Gautama? No, the things I'm looking at the compiler support is now compiler give you everything. They can they control everything. For example, the one thing we have is we have write a kernel function, but the kernel function is so big, requests so many registers. They just arbitrarily see through this local registers onto global memory to access. This is really bad. And also another thing, it's probably it's not compiler, it's interpreter, is this. So for all of us, we had to write really low-level code, C code, to access this device. But for example, if you only write MPI or OpenMP, there's certain patterns you can follow. We can write in that pattern, for example, map reduce, right? We write a map function, write a reduce function, we're done. We don't want to care about everything else. You have interpreter or another level of compiler, compile this code into my CUDA accessible PTX, actually their assembly code, then can run. So this piece of research is as just started, and we have not got there yet.
The compiler that exists, essentially,
yes.
Has the potential for performance.
Yes. So compiler exists, of course, otherwise we cannot use, but it's very inefficient. Yes, 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 but you know, but for example, you have a little bit problem of, you have 8 data paths in, and suddenly one data is actually getting here a little bit faster, and it requests other things, and other 7 are waiting. Even the other 7 actually can go through first. They really have really bad scheduling in here in terms of how the instruction is compiled to take advantage of some kind of other heuristics. Yes. That's right. Another thing I want to talk about is actually this piece of research other students, Deb and Sean and people from Dr. Quack's group is doing is what we call algorithm transformation. Right now, most people do is this. They have application. I have this nice algorithm. I simply optimize this algorithm, implement it onto my GPU, onto my this hardware GPU thing. Okay. But if you take a look, this is just trying to force them to take advantage of this instead of going reversely. You have hardware app abstraction. That's my GPU. That's my architecture. I have this problem, which is this. I want to transfer this, I design a new algorithm that can take advantage of this instead of I have existing algorithm trying to port it on there. This is a totally different idea. Because if you take a look, if, on this GPU architecture sometimes performance and the time complexity is not equal and everyone understands that. You have n square, you have n log n square or n log n, you compare this, oh, n log n square is bad. N log n is faster, but depends on different implementation in there. Sometimes n log n square is faster on GPUs. So performance and time complexity is not equal. I don't, some people starting doing performance models for this GPUs, but I did not see a lot of advantage into analysis of this on GPUs yet. Of course, hybrid computing. We have multi-core CPUs, we have GPUs, we have FPGAs, we have cell broadband, and later on, pay attention to this, Larrabee, Intel Larrabee is coming, and we have to jump on that. You know, we have to combine all the things in one box to get the best performance, which take advantage of different things. And the last application, guys, this question for you. Ask yourself, what if your algorithm can now run in real time? What if your algorithm can run 100 times faster than before? What you can do? That's my talk. Thank you very much. Question?
So thank you very much for the interesting talk. So here's a general observation, right? So what you're trying to do, you're using processor for graphics for general purpose computation. And since that for most computing systems of today, they're plagued by this condition that some latency lacks the bandwidth.
Right.
And intuitively, it seems to me that the bottleneck here should be going between main memory that assigns the work.
Right.
Right. And the GPU memory, right? So I was wondering what the condition of this latency versus bandwidth for this kind of computational model, and what can be done to it, if it's there, okay, first of all. And
right.
If it's there, what
There are a couple of directions in there, and I think some students in my class actually discuss about it. Sometimes is using prediction, actually. If we predict, we probably need that data calculate from other thread before, we don't need to ask them again. So the thing is we prefetch some data in my shared memory in the local cache before I actually using that. So, and there's a lot of research called a lock-free synchronization is, instead if I go back and lock this global memory, write data into that, and unlock that, ask another thread to take the data out into my, there's a lock-based synchronization. And it's starting using the prefetch, between iterations using, to do this actually using lock-free. The one other issue is kernel launches, basically. When you call a kernel function on GPU, and actually you can return back and have another kernel launch, and the data inside the GPU memory is not changed, so can use between different kernel calls. This is much faster sometimes than you access GPU memory, so they use different tricks, actually, to achieve this problem. But generally, Wu is not here, so NVIDIA CTO, they mentioned about this. This synchronization from device memory is so slow that they have to address it. 400 cycle synchronization between different cores along in different multiprocessors has to be addressed. So they are adding hardwares to that. So we're looking into this. So the exciting thing is I'm really optimized by this because we have still so many gamers buying this card and they have the money to do this research and we can benefit from. That's all we thank them for. Thank you. Question here? Okay, yes. Very good question. When we have one-year publication on high-performance computing conference, where play against. We're against a dual core implementation on CPU. Probably it's not the best optimized, but we have tried because there are our HCI students, but we want to try to get this dual core thing working. Okay. It's really depends on what you want to do. So when you have a paper, right, you want to convince people that you have some novelties in here, right? So in terms of GPU, novelties rely on so many areas. Algorithm redesign, you redesign algorithm, definitely better for for parallel computing, but even at right now, your implementation is not there yet, you have equivalent performance, you can still publish that. But if for some other cases, you want to say a simple algorithm, I just ported, I don't have enough novelty in there, but in terms of implementation, application impact, performance increased 100%, increased 100x. That's another novelty there in one exercise. So between those is different comparison strategies. For the later one, if you really want to say that's a big impact in the industry or in the research that the performance increased a lot, and you had to compare with a really optimized a multi-processor, a multi-threaded CPU version if you really want to compare how people are using. However, if you do another things, and sometimes, I'm not encouraging people to do that, sometimes you don't have enough time to do the fully optimized, and you, because you don't understand too much about the CPU side of multi-core and don't understand this cache call coherence stuff between multi-thread, you have a not perfect job, I would say, and still sometimes you get paper published. Okay, for example, for supercomputers, there's a baseline, LeanPack, right? Everyone compare with LeanPack performance. We talk about teraflops from LeanPack. Right now, for this, it's really up to the author, the scholar itself, to find if what I'm compared against is fair. And up to the reviewer of the conference or journal reviewers to editors to consider if this compare is fair or not. There's no standard right now, as I understand, right? There's not really no standard. You are working on the data mining area in compare with a video processing area, and you're talking about what kind of optimization you have. Different people have different opinion on that. So it's really not a standard there yet. But not longer. People still using graphics. That's one of the demo we're using is still using. But there's easy way. If you compare with graphics API and a C-based, a lot of people prefer using C-based.
So how do you